Welcome to episode 33 of season 11 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast, where we curry our way through the 2001 award-winning miniseries Band of Brothers, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today and the next 2 days is J-Dub of Dubsism. Welcome back to the show, John.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me. Going to be good to talk to you again, and I think we're going to have some interesting conversations over the next couple of days. So
we always have interesting conversations. Yeah, whether they make the final cut or not is something else, but we do have interesting conversations.
That's true. Maybe we ought to offer a director's cut, movie Rob After Dark kind of thing, you know?
Exactly. It's very, very possible. Very possible. So why don't we start off by you telling me and everyone else, what is your history with the miniseries Band of Brothers?
Band of Brothers is something that I was actually completely not familiar with at all until you suggested this. And then I thought, well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to watch the 3 segments that you showed me. I'm going to watch those before I watch anything else. And then I watched other bits and pieces of it. I did not actually ever get to see the whole series. I apologize for that. Okay. But I do know that in the 3 segments that we're going to talk about, that there's a lot of little transitions going on here that even if they're, not apparent right at the moment. And as we talk about that, you'll see what I mean. I mean, I'm probably just babbling right now, but give it time. I'll either make less sense or more. So
yeah, you always
it's an adventure. So
that's good. It works.
All right.
Excellent.
So Mr. Babble. All right.
So episode 33 begins with Winters finishing up his conversation with Doc Rowe, and ends with Moore telling a tale. So we ended things yesterday with Winters getting injured, having a little shrapnel in his foot, and he went to the aid station to get Doc Rowe to take care of it. Doc Rowe took care of it, and then Winters looked over and saw that Blythe is just sitting there staring out into space. And he asked Doc Rowe what's going on, and Doc Rowe goes, well, I don't really know. And this segment begins with Winters basically walking over to Blythe and beginning a little conversation with him. And he goes, Blythe, it's Lieutenant Winters. What happened? And, he crouches down next to Blythe, and Blythe then says, I don't know, sir. Things. It kind of just went black on me. And then Winters goes, you can't see? And I love what he does here, because Winters then, takes his hand and moves it, waves it in front of Blythe's face just to check, can you really not see anything? And, he says, you can't see? And he goes, not a thing, sir. I can't see a thing. So, I mean, first of all, it's very interesting, both from a movie aspect and behind the scenes aspect. The fact that, he's waving his hand in front of someone's face. As an actor, your normal reaction would probably be to blink, to move, to look at your hand or whatever. So, I mean, the actor here who plays Blythe really needed to, find a focal point and make sure that he's not diverting his eyes at any point from that, which I'm not an actor. I've never been an actor. I think that would be something very difficult to do, but maybe not. I don't know. What do you think? You think
that? Well, I'm just gonna quick aside. Like I knew you would. Like I 100% knew you would. You're walking right into my sports analogy. So keep going.
All right, that's good. I great minds, as they say, right?
Whoa. Or we have similar chemical imbalances, but
And that could be also, I guess that works also. It works either way. And
it's
the important thing is the
just
symbolism. Symbiosis, not symbolism.
that's easy for you to say, as the joke would go. No, it's all about the acting. There's you're if I know you, that you're about to say something else that I actually have sketched down right here that I think you're going to say. So keep going.
Well, why don't you just tell me what I'm gonna say? Let's see if you're right.
This is like this. I'm like Groucho Marx, say the secret word, win something. Let's see how right I am.
Okay, well, we're not up to Groucho Marx yet. He will be coming up later in today's episode. So, you jumped the gun on that one.
Well, one good foreshadow deserves another one. See, I'm working with you here.
Apparently. Apparently. So so on the one hand, he's basically just waiting to see if Blythe is just faking it. That's what it comes down to.
Oh, yeah.
The actor who plays him, Mark Warren, just does a great job of staring out into space. So for me, I obviously, as I said, I've never been an actor and I never want to be an actor. I've no desire to it. I just, like watching actors acting as other people. But remember those pictures that they used to have, those 3D pictures where you need to like focus your eyes and something like jumps out at you?
Yeah, the one where you had the little red and blue paper glasses.
No, I'm not talking about those. No. I'm not talking about movies.
Oh,
I'm not talking about 3D movies.
you all okay? Never okay. Yeah, just dating myself.
No,
That's all. But no, I
dating
got
yourself
you. Okay.
with somebody who completely understands that's fine. That's
Yeah.
how I knew that you were not talking about the same thing. But my point is, what I meant to discuss is, the 3D pictures that you have on the wall. There's a famous Seinfeld episode
Oh, yeah.
where George is in he's in the bathroom and he stares at it and ends up coming out of the he's at like a party and he comes out of the bathroom without his shirt on because he's so disoriented, from looking at the picture. So I mean that for me, I can definitely focus on something like that. Like whenever I see those pictures, I can look at them and within seconds I can tell, what is supposed to be popping out of it. And I know a lot of people, my wife included, who like, what the hell is that? I don't see anything. I just see a bunch of lines, that they're not able to find, I guess, the focal point or whatever it is with that whole thing.
Right.
Right. So I mean, I guess I'm assuming that's what Mark Warren does. He just need to focus on something and say, okay, I'm not going to divert my eyes at all. So this way, when Winters is waving his hand in front of my eyes, I'm not I'm not gonna slip up. Yeah, but he's very wide-eyed the way that he also looks at it. He sort of I think he looks like he's struggling to keep his eyes open with that whole thing.
You just that the struggling to keep his eyes open is what I had written right
There
here.
you go.
Now sorry, I won't interrupt you again until you're ready for the sports
I'm ready.
analogy.
Go ahead. Go ahead. Give it.
Okay, so well, are you done with the whole the acting and the eyes and all
I'm
that
all
sort of
done with that,
stuff?
yes.
Okay, because that's the heart of the sports analogy, because you said how hard is it to learn that? And I'm going to tell you right now, every football player in America above high school knows exactly how to do this. Okay, and it's all thanks to the concussion protocol. All right, didn't really have this in my day as a football player, but as I watched, nieces and nephews and all these other kids younger than me playing football today, they get hit in the head and they take them out of the game right away. And there's flashing the flashlight and the bingers and where are you and all this sort of stuff. And they learn real quick how to pass the little finger test and how to move their eyes and what doctors are looking for. They all know how to do it. And there's stories you can watch. You can go out on YouTube and find ex-football players at the professional level talking all about how, you know, if you get your bell rung, the last thing you do is grab your head. You hold your ankle, you hold your nuts, you hold anything else, but you don't put your hands on your head because that's the first sign they look for after a guy gets hit. And it goes on and on and on and on and on. But one of the big things was the eye discipline. It's like, you know, don't do this with your eyes. Don't move your head this way. Don't answer this question this way. Like I said, I knew exactly where this was going to end up. And I thought, yeah, because there's a rant in there too about how the concussion protocol of the NFL just really doesn't really work because it applies differently to players that you don't really care that much about, but your $50 million quarterback, he gets treated differently. It's like you go to the emergency room and, you know, you have broken your arm, but, you know, three gunshot wound guys are in front of you. You know, your problem is bad, but theirs is worse. And so, yeah, anyway.
First of all, that is a great.
The acting is out there.
Yes. It's a great, great analogy. No question about that. I like it. I like it. And I wonder if Mark Warren ever played football. Yeah, you know, he doesn't look like he might be like the kicker. Yeah, you know, I don't think he knows anything beyond that. So yeah, who knows?
kicker. I mean, kickers are players too.
They're not players, but they're usually much smaller. That was my point.
Yeah, they don't get knocked around as much. That's true. No.
They have big blockers around them.
Speaking as somebody who might have been one of those, yes.
Exactly. Winter says to him, "Well, you just take it easy, Blythe. We're going to get you out of here. Get you back to England. It's going to be okay." And then he goes, "Sir, I didn't want to let anyone down." And he goes, "Just take it easy." He goes, "It's okay, son." And Winter starts walking away, and then he calls back to him and goes, "Sir, yeah, what is it? Thank you, sir." And, you know, it's a very strange type of, I mean, the whole story of Blythe throughout this entire episode is slightly strange, you know, because of the hysterical blindness and all that stuff. So, you know, it's not 100% clear what's causing everything or whatever. And then he like.
Well, and he's not the only one. There's a couple of characters in these segments in particular that made me really, what's up with that guy?
But sure.
We'll come back to that later.
And then, you know, Blythe starts looking at his hand, and you can tell that he's actually able to now see. You know, I guess Winters is some kind of miracle worker, the way that he's able to, you know, convince Blythe that he's a magician. He's able to convince Blythe that he really or maybe he has the Force. You know these are not the droids you're looking for. You know, you actually can see. You're not really blind. Oh, wow. Look at that. I see my hand. And so Winters then walks back towards where Doc Rowe is. And then Blythe goes, I'm okay. Yeah, I'm okay. I'm okay. I think it's I'm okay. And Winters turns around and goes, you can see? He goes, God, I don't know what happened. I think I'm okay. And Winter says, all right, well, stay here a little longer and make sure. And then you can report back to your platoon. And then Blythe goes, all right, yes, sir. And then Doc Rowe, we can see on his face that he's also surprised about this because, you know, he was just saying just moments ago that nobody knows what's wrong with Blythe. He just can't see. And someone just, you know, the switch was just flipped back up somehow. But again, Mark.
You know what's funny is that scene I thought of. There's if you're familiar with the old American television show MASH, there's an episode that's really really close to this.
Okay, and what happens in that episode?
You know, it's obviously it was a sitcom show, but it was guy, hysterical blindness, hysterical paralysis, the whole thing. They bring in their psychiatrist, Freeman, Friedman, whoever, but he's the same miracle worker guy, and he does his Freudian whatever stuff, and poof, the guy walks out. They just condense it down to 30 minutes and add a laugh track, but it just felt
Okay.
familiar.
All right, that's fair. And then Doc Rowe says to Winters, "Now, can we get that bandage on?" He goes, "Yeah." He sits up, getting ready to get the bandage put on that Doc Rowe had started dealing with in yesterday at the end of yesterday's episode. So at this point, the scene changes, and we're now outside. We're in the it looks like the quad area. You have a whole bunch of a bunch of soldiers just all lounging around, waiting for orders, waiting for them to tell them to do something. So let's rest up a bit until we need to, that type of thing. And you can see that I mean, we can see Malarkey's there, we can see Mux there. We're gonna find out that Moore is there, and also Blythe, who's he's actually just lying on his back, looking up at the sky. These guys start having an interesting conversation, and then Moore says, "Berlin by Christmas. That's how I see it." And Malarkey goes, "Yeah, you're full of it." And then we see in the background Muck is squeezing something into his mouth, and he goes, "Oh God, this kraut cheese tastes like..." And then he cuts himself off and goes, "It stinks." Then Moore goes, "Well, the bread's stale too." And he gives it to them. So I mean, basically they Muck was able to find some cheese whiz or something to that effect. Do you know anything about the history of cheese whiz?
Oh, Cheese Whiz. Well, let's see. That was one of the things I had starred right down here as now, if I recall, in our previous conversations, you are a veteran of the Israeli forces, are you not?
That is correct, yes.
That is correct. And I've already outed us as being old men, but I thought that your service time and mine were kind of around each other. Mine is like 89 to 95.
Okay, it was exactly the same time. Mine was 93 to 95, and then I did reserve duty for like 15 years after that. So yeah.
Okay, so then the question I have for you is, I don't know what you guys had in Israel in terms of equipment. I know you got a lot of things from America. Did you guys get MREs? Meals ready to eat.
No,
Like
I know what an
they
MRE
came in a
is. No,
brown envelope.
we never got those, but that has a lot to do with the idea of that in the Israeli army everything is kosher. So they can't send us the MREs because the MREs are not kosher.
Oh, yeah. Okay, well, I mean, that's, yeah, I didn't think of that.
Well, I understand why
But
you
they could, I
wouldn't,
mean, they could easily have made them that way. But anyway, where I was going with all of that is one of the snacks that was in all of them was the only thing worse than cheese in a toothpaste tube, and that was cheese in a vinyl packet. And with that stuff and these industrial strength crackers, you could build a house. It was, I don't know how you could call it cheese. It was like wallpaper or like spackle, the stuff you fix holes in walls with. It was, it was terrible, but that's what I thought of when I saw that cheese.
okay,
And then
that's
that's why
fair.
I asked, did you guys get American crap? And I think
Yeah, no. We had our Israeli
you
crap.
missed out.
We had like different types of spam. That was the
Wait a
we
minute.
no,
How
it's
the
not
hell
spam,
can spam
not
be
spam.
kosher?
No, but it's not spam from ham. I said different kinds of spam. So it was like spam from turkey spam
Oh,
and beef spam,
yeah.
things like that. That's what I meant. That,
Okay.
you have your little tins. You had tuna, we had corn, we had like loaves of bread, things like that.
You know, you really when this podcast gets to your post-production phase, you really need to dub in the spam, 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 spam Monty Python bit under this last couple of minutes.
Well, spam a lot. What can I tell you? Yes, but you still haven't answered my question. When do you think Cheese Whiz was first produced? And
Cheese Whiz now.
I'm talking specifically about the craft version of Cheese Whiz. Not, I mean, because I'll give you a hint. It happens after World War II, which means that whatever they're using, the
Is
bread they're using there.
there a trip? Is there a trip through Philadelphia and the great religious divide in a cheesesteak involved in this story?
No, not at all. Not at all.
Because okay, well, here's your fun fact that fits into all this. I don't know exactly when the Kraft product we're talking about happened, but it's Cheese Whiz is, if you've ever been in Philadelphia, if you've ever lived in Philadelphia, my family's all originally from Philadelphia. There's Geno's and there's Pat's in terms of the two original shrines of the Philly cheesesteak. And they're very particular about how they're made. But the difference is one uses white cheese, like the provolone, that kind of stuff. The other uses Cheese Whiz,
Oh,
straight up out of the jar Cheese Whiz. And there's, you know, this is a there's a religious schism between the two. If you're either a cheese whizzer or you're a white cheese person, and never the two shall meet. So I'm gonna say it had to happen about 1948.
very close, 52.
Damn it, I wanted to say yeah, okay. I had two numbers in my head and I picked the wrong one, but okay.
Again, it's used usually as a topping for corn chips, hot dogs. It's mentioned here in this article, Philadelphia style cheesecakes, and
Cheesesteaks, not cheesecakes. Cheesecakes would be something completely
I
different.
said cheesecakes.
You said cheesecakes, yes.
Okay, I read tea steak, but might have said cheesecake. That's okay. I meant to say cheese.
It's okay.
Yeah, that.
I don't want anybody out there to get the wrong idea
No,
because
no, no, no.
another thing you can get in Philadelphia that is completely not going to work in your brain if you don't get it, but the Reading Terminal sells chocolate covered onions.
That actually sounds really, really gross. I'm sorry to say.
Yeah, most people think that, but there are people who, you know, lose a bet, do whatever, they try it, and then they swear by it.
Okay, so is
And we
you're
won't even talk about.
are you in that in that on that team?
Tried it. I'm on your team. They're gross.
Okay, thank you.
And I won't even talk about the only thing that's worse, that's in that Scrapple. And being Jewish, you would not have any idea of
I
this
have
because
no idea what that is. But
it's worse.
I've also never had a cheesesteak because I can't put cheese on there's separation of dairy and meat products. So you can't have them together.
Yep. So yeah, so then, you
I've had
know,
fake cheese.
talking about Scrapple, would you,
Right,
huh?
I've had fake cheese on like hamburgers and stuff like that, but obviously it's probably not the same. But that's okay. I don't feel I'm missing anything.
No, you definitely aren't missing out on Scrapple. Scrapple is even worse than Spam. I mean, Scrapple is every part of the pig except the yoink, and it's just ground up into a slurry and they fry it until it's disgusting. But it's an Amish thing. It turned into a Pennsylvania thing. There are Eastern Pennsylvanians who just swear by it. It's in their blood. I don't get it, but it's out there.
Okay, that is fair. There
So I'd rather have beef spam. So
you go.
we'll get back to at least Monty Python here.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so why don't we continue talking about Band of Brothers? So they're having
That's
events.
why we're here?
That
Okay.
is exactly why we're here. So Muck is not happy with this pre-Cheese Whiz. That
No.
German pre cheese was that he has the that he's trying out, and then he like grabs the stale bread from Moore. Just give me that, and then Moore begins to philosophize a little bit, and he says, "Yes, sir. The way we came in town today and took over, it don't seem like Jerry's got too much fight left in him. Moore, don't get hit in the face when Jerry throws in the sponge. All right, mark my words, Mal. Berlin by Christmas. And then he gets interrupted by Spears, who ends up showing up. And Spears goes, enjoy it while it lasts. We'll be moving out soon. Moore looks at him and goes, out of town, Lieutenant? Already? That's right. Moore goes, don't they know we're just getting settled here? And Spears just like gives him a look before he moves away. Now, did you notice that there's a guy in the back who's like trying on a German helmet?
Yeah. It's really weird. But, you know, I mean, everybody comes home with souvenirs. I mean, you know, I mean, right now in my house, I have a Japanese 7.62 millimeter rifle that my grandfather got. He drove Higgins boats for the Coast Guard. He drove the landing craft onto the beach for the Marines in Iwo Jima. Mm-hmm. And so Marines fought their way up the beach and he got a chance to go out and snag some stuff. And he had one of the things he had was this rifle.
Oh, wow.
And when he died, it kind of went down the food chain, and then I ended up with it. So
oh, wow.
I see a guy playing with a helmet, playing with a sword, playing with a rifle. It's like, I know where that's going.
No, for sure. But again, a helmet is a little harder to have to transport and take around with you all around. I mean, if you have a sword or if you have a rifle, it might be a little easier. And obviously, you know, throughout this series, and we know from real history, you know, a lot of people wanted Lugers. That was a simpler thing to take, you know, and hold on to.
Well, and, you know, to make the second MASH reference of the episode, there's episodes in there where there are, you know, supply sergeants who are, you know, mailing entire trucks home piece by piece.
And exactly.
You want to get a helmet home, you can do it.
True. So a helmet is not something you really are going to take apart piece by piece. You know, a truck maybe, but a helmet not. I mean, again, we will see this much later in the series when, you know, we see Spears dealing with all the German silver, you know, the silver candlesticks and silverware and stuff like that that he starts shipping back to America, you know. So, yes, people like to... let's just say that they like to scrounge, even though that is definitely not the word that should be used. But that's fine. It's close enough.
Yeah, that's. I mean, you're exactly right. Otherwise, you know, flea markets wouldn't exist.
That's true. Also, that's true. And you know, while they're having this whole conversation, we see that Blythe is looking at his hand. You know, mm-hmm. Still amazed, I guess, that he can still. You know, see what's going on and see his hand. Spears then just walks away. And Muck says, nice, Groucho. And he goes, what? Real smart. Funny that he's mentioning Groucho. You know, we all know that, you know, since this is 1944, so everyone there knows who Groucho Marx was. You know, Groucho himself.
Right. And
Groucho himself was already in his 50s at this point. You know.
Right. And, but he's still, we're still, I wish I had, if this were a video podcast, when you said the magic word earlier, I really wished I would have had the little duck to fall out of the ceiling, but we're a couple of years away from that yet.
Yeah,
so
sorry.
That's my excuse for why I wasn't prepared.
That's okay. No need. And then Muck goes real smart. You know, you're taking your life in your own hands. And he turns around and goes, ain't that right? And Malarkey goes, I told you. I didn't actually see it. And he goes, what? More than responds, he goes, what? Spears shooting the prisoners or the sergeant in his own platoon? Sergeant? What? I didn't hear that one. He shot one of his own guys. Well, supposedly the guy was drunk and refused to go on patrol. Who knows if it's true? Well, I know a guy who said an eyewitness told him that Spears hosed those prisoners. And Blythe goes, why? What for? Then Muck starts telling the story. He goes, on D-Day, Spears comes across this group of crap prisoners digging a hole or some such. Under guard and all, he breaks out a pack of smokes, passes them out. He even gives them a light. Then all of a sudden, he swings up his Thompson and then Muck makes a machine gun sound from his mouth. He said, he hoses them. I mean, god damn. Gives them smokes first. And it's great how Muck is actually taking a puff on his own cigarette as he says that, you know, to help emphasize the whole thing. He goes, you see, that's why I don't believe he really did it. Oh, you don't believe it? I heard he didn't do it. And then you know, we get to see you know, they show us another potential possibility of what happened, where you see another soldier just shooting the Germans with spears looking on. And you know, it's a very gruesome way that they're showing that this soldier takes him out. And then Moore goes, oh no, it was him, all right. But it was more than 8 guys. It was more like 20. And you know, they show us as in their potential fantasy world where they're showing this is going on, we see like guys running in the background towards spears to try and stop him from shooting these prisoners. And then Muck goes, hell of a shot. And then Moore says, well, all except for one guy who he left alone. We see that the German guy's hand is just like shaking as he's telling the story. So, I mean, I really like the way that they tell the story. I mean, nobody knows 100% if Spears did this or not. You know, the only person who really knows the truth here is Spears, and he never talked about it. In the first part of the miniseries, so they do show us the scene where Spears is walking towards these guys, and then, you know, you hear gunfire. So nobody, the miniseries is giving us the impression here that it's very possible that it was Spears who did this, but it's also possible that it's not. You know, they give us enough doubt, which I like, because, you know, as we get to know Spears over the course of this entire miniseries, we see that he is an amazing commander. So, you know, you want to like him. You don't want to have any disdain for him, or you don't want to think about the fact that, oh, this is a guy who possibly killed 8 or 20 prisoners or whatever it is. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. But I like how they put the little bit, they pepper in a little doubt here as to whether it really happened.
And that's the key to this whole piece, is that what you said about how you liked how they tell the story. Well, one of the things they do here is there's so much relatability in this. I mean, you, like I said, having been a veteran, me having been a veteran, you know that it doesn't matter which branch of the military you're in, there's three things that are common across branch of service, country, era, whatever. Yeah, okay, exactly. So, you know, whatever you want to call, I was going to add two other things, but you beat me to the punch. Which proves my point. You know exactly what I'm talking about. So you hear guys telling story A, and then it goes around and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, next thing you just hear in the echoes of the same jungle drums, you don't know what's true. You don't know what isn't. After a while, you start learning how to figure out your own way through this. And you see the seeds of that, like, you know, the way that story gets told. My point is every veteran of anything looked at that scene and says, yeah, this is just a toilet, a gram, or whatever the term is in your world, you know.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. No, I agree. That's but I think that, I mean, I've even spoken to people who knew Spears, and you know, said that he just never talked about it. Nobody knows for sure whether he did it or not. And you know, part of it is that he knew that people were talking about this. And, you know, he still wanted to, I guess, keep the legend alive type of thing. You know, if that's what people want to believe, well, let them believe it, you know.
Yeah. I mean, to go full Yogi Berra, what's a mystery without a mystery?
That's right. Exactly. So I like the way that they do this here in the miniseries. So it's nicely done.
I agree.
So do you have anything else you want to talk about of this particular 5-minute segment?
No, I think we've, or I should say you've allowed me to wander enough. I think we're good there.
Okay, excellent. So today's segment is Band Brand, where my guests will give their top 5 movie bands. So John, why don't you start off with your number 5 and work your way up?
Okay, number 5, and I don't know how tight you are on the rule of movie bands, because this is a TV show band, but I'm not doing this segment without mentioning them, so that would be a band called Squire of Frodo, which is a teenage rock progressive band from a cartoon called F is for Family, which you can still find on Netflix, I believe. Are you familiar with the comedian Bill Burr?
Yes, I'm definitely familiar with him.
Okay, Bill Burr wrote and produced this cartoon, and you'll hear his voice in it immediately once you start watching it, if you do start watching it. But the main character is based on Bill Burr, and except he's a dad in the 70s, and he has this 16-year-old kid who's a musician, but he's kind of a it's 1970s, so his band is kind of, I don't know, moody blues meets Yes meets just teenaged angst kind of crap. It's horrible progressive rock, but it's so hilarious in that show. I just had to mention them. I know it's probably a cultish reference, and maybe I'll get a few cheap views for the Netflix people, but I had to say it. Number four, band in Cheech and Chong, the song the. Baby, tell me how to live. I mean, that has to be mentioned just to see, just for Cheech Marin in the ballet tutu and the fairy wings. You got to see it just for that.
All right. Excellent.
Number three, since I got away with a TV reference once, I'm going back to another TV reference. Everybody knows about the Partridge Family, so that's why I'm not going to mention them. I'm going to mention the short-lived attempt by the Brady Bunch to compete with the Partridge Family, and that was in an episode called Johnny Bravo, where somebody discovered Greg and thought that they could make a pop star out of him, and he just took a huge fall on his face, and everybody who hates Greg loves that episode. So
Well, is that
if
is it, it they also did the it's a time for change song.
Oh, they did a lot of things. There were several really awful, Brady Bunch variety special kind of things. Those are,
No, but this was in the show when Peter's voice was changing.
Oh,
You know that.
yeah, that's definitely another one. Ugh. I did that to myself. I did that to all of us. I deeply apologize. So, the next one brings us back towards civilization, and that is Schroeder and the Ensemble during the Peanuts Like Christmas special. You got Schroeder on the piano, and Snoopy's doing something, and those were always fun. That's got to technically count as a band, right? And they're certainly fictional because they drew
Well,
them.
again, you're sticking very much to TV, but that's fine.
Okay, well. But then the last one, and you can't have the list without this band, and that's Spinal Tap.
Yeah, I'm actually surprised that you don't have the Blues Brothers on your list. I thought you would have them on there.
I was really trying not to, because I know you there was a list of there was suggestions, and then you do a little Google list and blah 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 that, and I was like, everybody's gonna say Blues Brothers, everybody's gonna say Blues Brothers. I mean, so I tried to stay away from that, but. When there was one, I had to pick one. It was either Blues Brothers or Spinal Tap that has to be on the list. I can only have one. I picked Spinal Tap.
Okay, that fair enough. Fair enough. All right. Now
You
we will play
want me
the
to give
Daily
my
Blues. You're what?
email address here for all the people that want to disagree with me? I'm just kidding.
Not yet, not yet, not yet. You'll be able to do that at the end.
Time to get your pencils handy, people.
Not yet, not yet. So now we will play the daily game of name that World War II movie.
Okay, God,
So
I really want to hear game show music here. Da, 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 da,
yeah, well, you'll be able to hear it on the final edit because it's
da.
there.
Out, outstanding.
So, all right, so let's spin the wheel and see what we get. Okay, this is a movie that came out in 2001. And the female lead is Kate Beckinsale, a World War II movie
Oof.
that came out in 2001. It is a 3-hour epic.
Oh man, I'm gonna, yeah. I'm just gonna white flag on that one.
No, I'm not
No.
letting you white flag it. Not letting you white flag
Oh,
it. It was
I don't have an answer.
okay. It was directed by Michael Bay. Does that help?
No.
Okay. It stars Josh Hartnett and Ben Affleck.
That got me as far as I can see the movie you're talking about, but I'm not gonna pull up the title,
Okay.
so.
It was released 70 years after the event that the movie is named for. Okay, and it came out in 2001.
Is this Pearl Harbor?
Yes, it is. Very
Okay, after you had to spoon feed me. Now, see, okay, I never saw that movie. It just looked like it would really annoy me, so
Okay.
I'm not the world's biggest Ben Affleck fan. I plead ignorance. Got
You
no other choice.
you don't need to make excuses. It's okay. All right, so do you want to tell people where they can find J-Dub?
J-Dub, yes. Hopefully all the hate mail people that said I should have picked Blues Brothers. Here you go. Here's your shot. You can find me at dubsism.com, Dubsism. It's the world's most interesting independent sports blog out there. You can find me at dubsism at yahoo.com for the email. I'm also Facebook, Instagram, the usual suspects. Dubsism, it's a first page search result on Google.
All right, excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So, until tomorrow, Kurahee!
Hurry!